This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, I'm Michael Cruz Kane, and welcome to episode 2 of A Good Cry. You made it. Woo! Let me start by saying a few business things. Number one, if you like the pod, I hope you will give us a review. I hope you will share it, and I hope you will tell your friends and your enemies. I hope you'll tell them too. Number two, do you have something you want me to know about? Do you have something you want to tell me? Do you have something on the subject of grief that you think people would find interesting? If so, email me at agoodcry@theradiopoint.com. Again, agoodcry, all one word, @theradiopoint.com via electronic mail. And number three, if you want to see me come talk about grief live, I am doing shows on October 23rd and November 7th in New York City, and the links are in the description of this very episode. Finally, number four, enormous, hugely humiliating and embarrassing clerical error, which is that on episode 0 and episode 1 of this podcast, I said that my son died on his 36th day of life. Which I said because I was reviewing hospital documents right before we recorded those episodes to make sure I wasn't getting any details wrong. Prior to that, my whole life, I've been saying he died on his 34th day of life. Well, guess what? I sat down with the calendar and counted out the days with my finger, and I'd been right all along. It was always 34 days. Moral of the story, you can only trust yourself in this life. If there's one thing you get out of this podcast, that's what I want you to remember. Oh my God, just kidding. Please don't believe that. Okay, grief stuff. Today I'm thinking about how things are supposed to get better. You've got This Too Shall Pass. You've got The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow. Tomorrow is Another Day, or whatever else someone gave you on a fancy little embroidered pillow, you know? Okay, fine. But it doesn't always feel like that, right? Some things you don't get over. You're going to carry them with you forever. For me, I definitely feel incredibly sad less often, but I do still feel it. And maybe this is weird, but that sadness is nice. I like it. There's no rush to suddenly feel fine all the time. Take your time. And maybe instead of the sun will come out tomorrow, it should be more like there is a sun out there, and if at some point you want to look at the sun again, that is totally up to you. No rush. Take your time. I know that would be like an enormous pillow. I mean, just huge. And the amount of time it would take to embroider that would be insane. Anyway, my guest today is the amazing Nicole Byer. She is the Emmy-nominated host of Nailed It. She is a funny and nice person. She is a comedy powerhouse, and she's a griever. She talks about losing her parents, her grandmother, her uncle, and she also brings up the idea that some grief can be permanent and indelible. And I think if someone had told me that right when my son died, I would have been so scared. Because the idea of having that grief that I felt in that moment, every single day, every moment, would have been really overwhelming. But now, that grief and tapping back into it feels kind of beautiful to me, if that makes sense. And I know to some of you, it does. This is A Good Cry, episode 2. I hope it helps. Hi, Nicole. How are you?
Michael Caine, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for doing it. I know you're a busy human being. Nicole, this is a podcast about grief.
Yeah.
And I wanted to. There was no segue at all, not even really an attempt.
No.
Is there someone in your life that you've lost that we can talk about on the pod?
Yeah. We could talk about my parents. Both my parents took the stairway to heaven years and years and years ago.
How long ago?
My mom died when I was 16, and then my dad died when I was 21.
Was it like they had some kind of illness, or was it like a sudden thing in both cases?
Both sudden. So my mom died of pulmonary deep thrombosis, I believe is the name of it, which sounds like a parade, like thrombosis.
yeah, but, like it's part of the music, man.
That got me. But she had a blood clot that traveled from her leg and stopped her heart. And she called my dad instead of calling 911 because she didn't know what was happening. And like by the time my dad got home, she was gone. And then my dad died of like a massive heart attack. I was in New York living at the time, and I went and saw one of like a staged reading of one of my favorite plays, Fat Pig. Neil LaBute, canceled quietly like a year ago.
Oh, was he got a quiet cancel?
Yes. See, you don't even know. You know Fat Pig and you know Neil LaBute, but you didn't know he was canceled.
I could easily, like based on his subject matter, though, I could easily see him getting canceled.
Yeah, one of his first works that was made into a movie was called In the Company of Men. Have you seen that?
I have seen In the Company of Men.
It's such a fucked up story.
I also saw a play that he wrote with Ben Stiller and Jeffrey Wright and Amanda Peet at the Public Theater.
Yes, some people.
You saw that?
No, I read it.
Okay. Well, yeah, the spoiler kind of like throughout the play, you're like, is this guy racist? Mm-hmm. And you sort of think he's not. And at the end, he gives a speech where I think he says the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sounds like, oh, right. He's very racist. And yeah. Anytime a playwright, like post-1990, writes a play where a white guy says the N-word, I'm always like, did you write this whole play just so you could write that word? Just so you could justify this
Isn't
part?
Isn't that why Quentin Tarantino still makes movies?
That's his whole thing. He's just like, how many times can I say it before I die?
I will say this about Neil LaBute. Yeah, like his subject matter is like shit you never like want to talk about. Fat Pig is literally about a love story between a man and a fat woman who he genuinely likes and loves and fucks her and loves her. And at the end of the play, I'm ruining it. Can That's I okay. ruin it?
Yeah,
is it fucked
go for
up
it.
To ruin?
No.
Well, stop. Let's skip ahead 15 seconds if you don't want to hear the end.
Yeah, use that skip button.
At the end, he breaks up with her because he doesn't want to show her to his friends. The Shape of Things is another one that's got a fucked up twist. Bash is a fucked up twist. It's all such dark subject. Anyway, so I went to a stage reading of Fat Pig, my favorite play, and my friend lived in Jersey with his parents at the time, and I was like, where are you going? He was like, oh, I'm going to go back to Jersey. And I was like, well, you know, I don't need to stop by my apartment. I'll go back to the city tomorrow. Take me back to Jersey with you. I'll go, like, surprise my dad. And my sister was living at home at the time because she had just finished college and she was debating whether she was going to go to grad school or not. So I get there and I was like, Papa, which is what I called my dad. And he was always like, why do you call me that?
Did your dad have an accent?
Yeah, he was from Barbados.
Nice.
It was
nice.
A very slight accent that only came out when he was mad. It was like
Got it.
A Barbadian, Jersey, Chicago accent. So like he just said, like sometimes you just be like, the way you say shit is so fucking weird. But So I was like, Papa, and he was like, hello. And he was like, it's nice to see you. And we never really got along. But like that night, he had gotten into like making breads and pizzas. So we made a pizza that night. And he like went to the store and got me ground beef because I love ground beef on pizza. And we just like had a lovely night where we like didn't fight. And he like thanked me for coming home. And then my sister woke me up at like, I guess like 10 and was like, I think dad's having a seizure. So then we, like, called an ambulance, and turns out he was having a massive heart attack, and he passed away that day.
So you were home when that happened?
Yeah, truly by fucking chance, and I, like, thank God every day that, like, I was home for it, because I don't... My sister, she's older than me, but she's, like, a little bit more sensitive than me, and, like, I'm a little bit more street smart, and she's a little bit more book smart, so, mm-hmm. like... In peril, it helps to be a little street, like just a little savvy to be like, we have to call 911, as opposed to like, are you okay, dad? Blah, 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 blah. And she had the wherewithal to like wake me up to be like, what do I do? Like, if I wasn't home, I don't know what she would have done. And what an awful thing for someone to go through alone. So, like, I was just happy to be there.
So, you said that you and your dad didn't fight, like, you had like a great night together.
Mm-hmm.
What or you said like as if you were surprised, where did you get and your dad have like a contentious relationship? Or
it wasn't contentious, I just kept doing things that he fully didn't understand. Like,
gotcha.
I wanted to be an actress and he was like, but you're so great at arguing, why don't you go to law school? And I was like, because I don't want to be in school anymore, it's hard for me to concentrate.
My grandfather is the same way with me. I mean, he's dead now too, but I do associate like a particular like immigrant mindset with like, you are smart, you should be a lawyer, period. That's
yeah.
a thing that I know is good in the world.
Yeah, and my sister, she was going to grad school for, like, education to be a teacher, and that was a thing that him and my family understood.
Yeah.
And it was like, you do improv? What the fuck does that mean? One of the first stand-up jokes I wrote was... So a lot of the jokes, my first jokes, were about having dead parents. And let me tell you, they did not go over well to an audience of 25-year-olds who had parents. But so it was, I asked my dad to come to my improv show, and he said yes, but then he died because he'd rather be dead than watch his daughter do object work. And people don't like it.
Oh, that's very funny, though. I mean, I was on, I think, your first Harold team. Is that right?
Were we Standard Oil? Were you on Standard Oil with me?
I was on, okay, Hurtful, but yes, I was.
Yes.
That was not a very, like, that was not a great, very funny people, lovely people on that team, but I don't think.
Terrible team.
Not a good team. So I think, like, if you could choose between having your last memory of your dad being seeing a Standard Oil show or having, like, a lovely dinner with ground beef on pizza.
Lovely dinner.
I don't know who wouldn't take lovely dinner.
Were you there for that one rehearsal where we were literally arguing the fundamentals of improv?
I was not there for that rehearsal, but when I went through my email to find your email for this, I ended up reading a zillion emails about, like, the philosophy of improv. And it is
so funny.
Just crazy how much energy. I mean, I guess, you know, whatever. I loved it. I still love it and like was really into it. But if someone sent me emails like that now, I'd be like, hey, bro, I'm going to just like mute you for a while.
Yeah, you'd be like, I can't talk to you, you fucking lunatic. What are you, Looney Tune? This is so insane. But yeah, I mean, I devoted a good chunk of my life to make 'em ups. But that being said, like, I still fucking love improv. There's something magical about it.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I don't want to be presumptuous, but it seems like it's served you very well in your career, that it's like...
Oh,
like,
absolutely. I don't know how regular actors get jobs. Like, I have no idea. Like, I got a manager because they saw me in an improv show be very funny.
Right.
Yeah, I got my commercial agent via UCB at a class that they had. Like, everything I've ever gotten has been from improv.
So when your mom died, you were 16 then. Were you trying to be an actress at that time also?
Yeah, she really wanted me to take, like, the PSATs. I almost just called them pre-SATs. That's how...
That's how academically oriented you are?
Yes. She wanted me to take the PSATs, and I lied and was like, I signed up for them. And then she was like, did you? I don't know if there was proof or anything, but she was like, weren't they happening today? And I was like, whoops. But she was like, why wouldn't you sign up for them? And I was like, because I'm going to be an actress and I don't need SATs. And she was like, you have to go to college. And I was like, you can't make me. And guess what? She died, so I didn't have to go.
She died, and you were like, what are you going to do now? How are you going to make me do it now?
Yeah, another joke I wrote was, me and my mom had a fight before she died. She didn't want me to be an actress, and I wanted to be an actress, and she died, so I won. Something like that. I can't remember, but
solid. Again. These are solid jokes. You should not be... I mean, if you want, we'll edit these out of here, so you can save them up.
No, it's okay. People really hate them. Like, they get so sad. And I'm like, okay, guys. It's really funny when people feel bad for you in comedy, because it's not like if I left my house to get on a stage to say in front of a group of people a really sad thing and I wanted you to go, aw, I'm a sociopath, okay? Like, that's a fucking insane thing. I'm not saying anything on stage that I don't think is funny.
You're not trying to get pity from people.
No, that's literally a lunatic thing.
I mean, I'm not trying to push your career in any direction. Seems like you're doing okay. But I feel like that's a thing. I mean, I don't know. It's sort of the whole premise of this is that people do want to talk about it. And I bet when you're talking to 25-year-olds that in a group of like 20 people watching you, there are 24 people who are like, this is terrible. And then one who's like, I've been waiting my whole life for someone to tell this joke. You know what I mean? There's another 16-year-old who's about to go to AMDA or whatever, who's like,
oh boy, I hope they don't go. AMDA's one of the worst schools, I think, maybe in America.
Oh no, they're a sponsor of this podcast.
They don't have no money.
Did you go to AMDA?
Yes.
Did you go to AMDA? I didn't. I just randomly said that.
Oh, wild. Yeah, I went to AMDA, SCAMDA, and for the longest time, they didn't claim me as a graduate, and I would talk about that, and then they finally claimed me, and I was like, don't claim me now. And I love to go on podcasts and go on record and say it was a bad school.
Continue the crusade against AMDA.
It was just bad. It was. I couldn't believe the shit that they were like. You can't audition. I'm like, but like, isn't that the whole thing? Like, aren't we supposed to like audition to be actors?
Isn't that the point of this?
And they're like, finish our training. And I'm like, okay. And we do like Shakespearean stuff. And I was like, we're not diving deep enough into Shakespearean stuff for for us to just move on so quickly.
Oh man, acting school. I wanted to ask you a question about your mom. So when your mom died, what was the grieving process like for you and you and your sister and your dad? Is that all? That's the whole family?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah. I don't think you forget shit like that. Like,
right.
I was 16. My sister was 17 or 18. And then my dad is a quiet immigrant. So he didn't really know how to deal with the grief. My sister and I didn't really know how to deal with the grief. I dealt with it by like acting out. Like my dad wasn't really like in charge of like the rules of me and my sister. So he like sat us down and was like, okay, I'm going to give you guys a credit card because your mother was the one who would like buy stuff with you. I work all day. So like, I can't, if you need gas, like I'm not going to just keep giving you money. Just like use the card for gas. Let me know if you need to buy anything. Also, what is your curfew? And I was like, oh, my curfew's midnight. And Catherine, my sister, was like 10. And he's like, okay, so you come home at midnight. You come home at 10. She's older than me. I would like make up fake permission slips for him to sign and be like, the school needs cash because they're not taking checks anymore. So he would give me cash and I would like skip school and I'd go to the city and I drink a lot. So it was a lot of weed.
Is that different from what you would have done if your mom hadn't died? Or is that like, are you a person who would have gone to the city and drank a lot and smoked a lot of weed? Or does your mom dying change your behavior like that?
I think it just made it happen earlier.
Got you.
Like, I just wasn't scared of things because I was like, whatever. Who cares? I'm going to throw caution to the wind. I wouldn't have been able to get away with the stuff that I got away with if my mother was living.
Because of her or be like permission you got from like your friend group or whatever?
Well, my mom is just savvier than my dad. My mom would be like, this permission slip is in Comic Sans. This is not a permission slip.
Yeah, this
also,
is written on a cereal box.
The school's not taking cash. Yeah, it would happen later in life.
Like it accelerated your whatever kind of maturation process you were going to have.
Yeah.
The death of your mom made that go faster.
Mm-hmm, I would say.
And did you have to, like, play a role in your family? Like, did you have to act differently toward your dad? Did you feel any kind of way about a different, like, levels of responsibility? Or was it more like, I got to get out of here?
No, I think it was just a sad house. Like, when was it? I guess it was, like, a year after my mom had died. Or maybe a couple months. I think it was my grandparents who had come over.
Your mom's parents?
No, my dad's parents. I can't remember who it was who came over. But, like, they opened the front door and they were like, my mom died in October. And they were like, this is a Halloween wreath on the door or a fall wreath or whatever. And my dad's response was, well, Bonnie wanted it up there. And I think that was a very apt way to describe our house. Like,
got you.
Time kind of stopped because my mom wasn't there anymore. And she was the glue that held shit together. She was definitely like the matriarch. She did the laundry. She was like a mom. She like loved being a mom and was a mom and took care of us. And then that person was like gone suddenly. So it was like, what the fuck do we do? How do we do Christmas? How do we do any of this shit?
So what happened, like when you would get to Christmas, like that? So Christmas comes pretty soon thereafter.
Well, I tried to make Christmas like I was my mother. Like I put up the tree, I decorated the house. And then the tree fell on me, and then I said, fuck Christmas. I do not like Christmas.
No. The tree fell.
Yes.
Fuck.
So, yeah, like, I still to this day do not really like Christmas. I don't like holidays.
And you think, and that's, like, to do with your mom. Like, your mom had, like, held such a space in those events.
Yeah. My mother loved holidays. My mom loved Thanksgiving. She loved Easter. It was always, like, a big to-do. So I mean, I could, like, carry out her spirit and, like, do the same thing. But I'm like, I'd rather just go the opposite way.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think people say time heals all, and that's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Time just gives you space to go, have I forgotten about this person I love? Time just gives you distance, and distance sometimes makes you feel guilty for living a life when that person can't live anymore. So it makes me sad to celebrate those holidays, and I acknowledge it, so I don't do it.
So, like, the holidays, there's, like, a feeling of guilt, it sounds like. Is that an accurate way of describing it?
It's not, like, guilt. I guess I'm speaking for, like, some people might feel guilt for, like, still living while the person's dead. Like,
yeah.
I don't feel guilty for it. I don't know. For me, I'd rather just be chill and let the people who want to celebrate, celebrate, and I'll just, like, chill in my room.
Got you. So do you avoid those kinds of things in general? Like the big holidays, you're more like, I'm going to pass. I'll see you on like just a regular Friday.
Yeah. Although like lately, like last year, I kind of got into it. I like went and saw Santa because I was in Virginia Beach, I think the week before after Christmas. I like sat on Santa's lap and that was stupid and fun.
That seems fun.
Like, yeah. Like I'm trying to figure out like where I sit with things like that.
Yeah. So the detail-oriented stuff in your house, you said it seemed like for a minute you tried to fill that role. And then when your dad dies, like the grief is, I would imagine, is compounded. When that happens, was it like, of course? You know what I mean? Like, I think people who have suffered a tragedy and then the second tragedy happens are just like, well, I'm a tragedy person, so...
Well, I went through a phase where I was like, oh, my God, any age that means something to me, someone's going to die. Like, you're sweet 16, you're 21, you can drink.
Oh, God, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, those are big ones.
Yeah, 25, my godmother died.
No.
Yeah, and then my grandmother died when I was, when did she die? I think I was 18, maybe. So it's like, ooh, you can vote and buy cigarettes. And then 30... my uncle died. So I was like, I'm cursed. And then my therapist was like, you're fully not cursed. Your sister was a different age. And it wasn't like titular ages when these people died.
I thought you were going to say your therapist died. That's what I thought you were going to say.
My therapist passed.
Then my therapist died.
I dug her up and I Weekend at Bernie'd her and said, I'm not done. I still need help. But she was like, you're not cursed. Like, that's a thing. Like, you're just trying to make it your fault, and it's not your fault. How is it your fault that people die?
Oof, that sounds like good therapy right there.
Yeah, it's great. It was, like, that was something I really needed to hear, that, like, it isn't my fault. I didn't kill my mother. I didn't kill my dad. I don't have these special powers that, like, kills people that I love. It's just the luck of the draw. Like, shit isn't fair. Life isn't fair. And that's just something that you kind of have to deal with.
Did you really feel that way? You felt like... somehow I'm doing this?
Yeah, I was like, I'm cursed. Everyone I love is going to die. And it's like not true.
Wow. When your dad died, was the process of grieving for him different than it was for your mother? I guess because just you and your sister, right?
Yeah. It was different because it was like accelerated in a way where like my mom died. We had time to like figure out what life is. I guess I have to finish high school. We have to, like, keep going. And then when my dad died, it was like, well, I live on my own in New York. My sister was trying to figure out if she's going to grad school. We have a full house that we either have to pay property taxes on. Neither one of us have jobs that we can do that. And then the upkeep of this house. Or we sell it. And then selling a house that somebody has lived in for 25 years to people. Because we never cleaned my mom's closet out. We never cleaned my mom's stuff. And... like, that was a difficult thing to do. And so it's like, you grieve, you have the funeral, you're sad. Fuck, now we got to clean this house out and try to sell it.
Isn't that crazy that, like, when you have, like, a tragedy, the idea of the world just, like, keeps going? Like, the ritual things, you're talking about, like, Christmas and Easter and those holidays. I've talked about this with friends before, but those are all, like, stop time moments where, like, everything freezes for a second and you have, like, a moment to think about stuff. And you would expect, like, everybody to have, like, whatever, an anti-Christmas on the day that your loved one dies. But they don't. They just, like, keep going, and the real estate market's still humming, and the taxes are still due.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I will say, when my dad died, it was funnier. Maybe because I used a lot of humor to deal with my mom's death. And then, but then, like, you just realize the humor also a little bit when you're older. Like, my dad never reported my mom's death to a lot of places. So, like, her credit card was still turned on. She still had a bank account. She, it was just, like, all these things we had to be like, okay, so, like, our dad died X, Y, and Z. And they're like, oh, well, next to Ken is his wife, Lily. And we were like, oh, she dead, too. And they're like, what? And we're like, oh, okay. So then we had to, like, submit the death certificate to, like, a bunch of different places. It's so funny when you inherit, like, an IRA or something. They go, and why did you inherit this? And you're like, what do you mean, why? The person who had it died. And then they're like, oh, we're so sorry for your loss. And it's like, okay, well, you know, this conversation could have just been better.
Yeah, and just give me the IRA and don't talk to me.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we cremated my dad. And he, so, like, my mom is, like, a fat woman, and then my dad was, like, very fit and rode a bike all the time and exercised and played tennis and was truly, like, in the best shape, I think, of his life. And we cremated him and sprinkled him on a bike path near the beach, and we were arguing over who was going to do it. It was me, my sister, and my grandmother, and I finally
arguing
was, like,
because you all wanted to do it or because you all wanted to be like, I don't want to do it?
I don't remember who, what it was, what, like, whether... I think maybe nobody wanted to do it. I don't remember exactly, but I grabbed and I was like, I'll just do it. And I truly just really dumped it. And then a gust of wind came as I was speaking and my dad blew right into my mouth.
Wow.
And I've never seen my grandmother laugh harder.
I mean, literally part of you forever.
Yeah, truly, until I take a big old dump.
Cremation is also like, it's crazy. Like, what your dad becomes after he's cremated, like how little dad there is.
My mom is also cremated, and I guess I don't remember the box she came in, because if you cremate somebody, they come to you in a, truly like an Amazon package. It comes to you in a fucking cardboard box and then a black plastic thing that is so hard to just get into. So you get the person all over your fingies, and then you have to dump it into something else. It's like, it's not... It's, I would say maybe it's unsavory. I don't know.
Oh, it's definitely unsavory.
It's really fucked up the way they send you your fucking mother.
Yeah, I mean, we cremated my son too. And like the amount of ash that is my son is like, it's nothing. Like if I took it out of the little urn that it's in and put it in the kitchen, you'd be like, oh, this is like these are spices. You know what I mean? You wouldn't. It's impossible to believe that a human
being. How old
was he? He was 34 days old, and he was born premature. Mm-hmm. So he was, like, even for a 34-day-old, he was small. Mm-hmm. But, like, cremation is just one of those things that, like, nobody's talking to you about. I still don't really know, like, expensive. Yes, and I still don't know, like, how it happened. Like, everything was just happening all at once, and you're just like, I'll just, whoever, like... I want to get my kid cremated. Whoever will do, literally anybody could have walked by and be like, I'll do it. And I'd be like, great. Then you do it and just let me know when it's done. Yeah. I don't know how it happened. I don't know anything about it.
You got to buy a coffin first. And it's insane that you have to buy a coffin for someone to get burned in. It's so wild. You buy like a
Did I do that? I bought a coffin. Is that what happened? You put a coffin?
Yeah, you buy like a vampire coffin, like a no frills, no metal. It's just like a wood box. And then they go into this, into an oven, and then you cook them up real good. You burn them.
Dude, like, I mean, I really don't know.
It's fucked up. It is truly, really wild. And nobody really prepares you for death.
Yeah, because cremated is like a word that people say, and it's like, oh, whatever. Yeah, okay, you got cremated. But when you're really like, oh, I guess what that is They're going to put you in a thing and they're going to burn you up.
Yeah.
And I picked that. I said, this is, yeah, we'll do, of all the things you could do, and I guess there aren't that many, the one we're picking is, I guess, turn him into ashes is what we chose.
Yeah, but then also it's just like, I wouldn't want to visit a grave, you know?
Oh, like, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not saying that's any better. I'm just saying, like, when you really, like, think about is, it's like, this is a crazy thing we do. Burying them is also crazy. Like,
yeah.
Like, we bought it, like, buying an expensive box and being like, I'm going to wrap him like an expensive present and bury him underground for the afterlife to open him up is also, I mean, oh God, not to take that away from anybody for whom that has a different meaning.
Yeah, sure. If you want to go visit a literal, just bones in the ground, then
yeah,
by all means, do it.
And you may love bone, like bees in the G might be your whole thing. And if it is, mm-hmm. I love that for you.
But like mausoleums, those are also fucked up. It's like a bunch of dead people behind marble.
It's just that really thinking about what those things are is not something that I ever would have done before. I mean, I barely do it even since my son died, but just like the specifics of what happened are really absurd.
Yeah, it's wild.
But sorry, I cut away from a story in which you were inhaling your dad.
Oh, yeah, that's about it. Just, okay. You know, ate my dad right up.
And do you, like, do you still think about, I mean, I'm sure you think about your mom and dad from time to time. Does the way in which you process that grief, has it changed for you?
I, like, allow myself to be sad when I feel sad that I don't have parents. All the videos of people, like, hugging their parents through, like, sheets and shit. I'm like, oh, I'd like to do that. I'd love to try to figure out how to see my parents right now. I'd love to call my mom and be like, isn't this wild, you know?
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where anything that people are complaining about, you're like, I wish I had that complaint. I wish I had to get on the phone with my mom and be like, you need to, like, wear your mask and you need to, like, you know, slow down volunteering right now, because she'd be volunteering. She, like, loved people and helping. And then you'd have to be like, Dad, you need to start volunteering because you can't just fucking sit inside and watch tennis all day. Like, I would fucking love that. Like, I would love to see what they're like in their old age. Like, would they be little cuties or would they get ugly? You know? It just, like, small things like that. Like, kind of like how, I mean, I'm a single person, and whenever I see couples fighting, I'm like, ooh, what a treat. Wouldn't that be fun to have, like, an argument over lasagna?
Yeah, totally. You were talking about quarantine now. Are there other times when you, like, envision your parents? Are there other, like, events in your life like that?
I mean, anytime I have, like, really good news or, like, something fucking cool happens, like, Nailed It got nominated for an Emmy, and it would have been
brag.
Well, yes, it is a brag, but also, like, I don't have my parents bragging for me. Like,
right.
It would be so cool for my mom to be able to go to church and be like, she did it.
Oh,
she,
that's the best
you
shit.
Know? And then I have to be like, Mom, stop. But, like, not stop. I love
yes.
this. I love that you're proud of me. And it'd be like, ha, Dad, I finally fucking did it. You know? Like, it would just be, like, nice to be
yeah.
like,
Dad, I have a lawyer now.
Yeah, I have a fucking entertainment lawyer. Can you even?
Yeah. Like, that idea of being able to, like, do something so that your mom can brag about it to the local mm-hmm. newspaper or whatever
yeah.
is so, like, I feel that motivation all the time. And then, like, for me, it's, like, the inverse where, like, stuff will happen with my kids and it's like, oof, and what about the other kid? Like, what would he be doing?
Mm-hmm.
My kids don't do this anymore, but I do think when they were, I mean, they're still young, but even when they were younger, there would be things where kids would go around the classroom and be like, my name's Fiona and I have a bicycle or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they'd get to my kids and they'd be like, this is me and I have a dead brother. And it's like, well, that's not what that's for, really.
That's very funny.
Yeah, it is. It is very funny. I mean, just to imagine the other kids in the class all going home and all telling their parents and being like,
they have a dead brother. Yeah. Do I have one?
Why can't I have a dead brother?
I want a dead brother.
Yeah. And then murdering their siblings. Oh, that's where it starts. The story about you dumping out your father's ashes is insane. Are there any other stories like that, like of crazy things people said to you maybe, like when you were trying to process your grief? I feel like sometimes people come out of the woodwork and say something kind of nuts or...
Oh, I mean, the thing I really hated that people would say is like, she's in a better place. Yeah. No one really said that about my dad because my dad was, like, not a religious person. Although he would, like, guilt me into going to church. So my mom was very religious, and I would go to church with her. And then after she died, my dad was like, aren't you still going to go to church? And I was like, no, I'm free. And he was like, I think your mom would really like it. And I was like, ooh. But what the fuck? You don't even go. What's wrong with
that
you?
That is so heavy.
Yeah, it was fucked up.
What kind of church did your mom go to?
Baptist.
Okay.
Which is, like, fine and good, but, like, on a Sunday, I don't need to be at church from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yeah, yeah.
A full-time fucking job. Clock in, clock out.
Is that what it's like at Baptist
Church?
Well,
you got to go to Sunday school at 9, and service will start at 11, 11:30, and then it'll go to about 3.
Ooh.
And then you got to eat dinner with these fucking people.
Oh!
And it wasn't, like, every Sunday. Sometimes we would, like, get out at 3, and that would be so great. But a lot of times you were there till, like, the sun would be shining, and then you'd leave and it wouldn't be. You'd be like, wow. Where the fuck did my Sunday go?
Went right in that church. I was a churchgoer. I was in a boys' choir. Brag. So I was at church 3 times a week, and I spent a fair amount of time in church. And you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much liked it. I mean, I liked it pretty much. It's not like for me, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's for other people, and I'm like, you should have it. It's good for you. Did you ever go to church for your mom or no?
Not for...
I mean, like, after she'd passed, sort of like in that way that your dad was like, your mom wants
you to go. A couple of times, because my sister still went. My sister still goes. So, like, a couple of times I would go. But for the most part, I would just sleep, baby.
Did church do anything for you? Like, did it help you process? Like, even if you weren't, you know, don't consider yourself Christian, which it doesn't sound like you do.
Listen, I don't know what I consider myself, but I think there's something out there, and I'm not going to say that there isn't, you know?
I guess my question is, like, does that idea help you when you think of your parents? Is there some part of you that like, thinks of it in terms of heaven and hell? And
I mean, it would be nice if they were still somewhere looking down at me and cheering for me. But, you know, I don't know. Who knows? I just know that there's been people placed in my life at different times in my life that were support systems that I needed. I know it's not them per se. I just know that the universe has sent me different people at different times to give me things that I need that I wasn't necessarily getting because I don't have parents, if that makes any sense.
No, that makes complete... I mean, to me, it makes complete sense. I don't know if it will to everybody, but the idea that, like, there is some force at work.
There's different people in my life who, like, cheer for me. And it's different than, like, a fan cheering for you or someone who likes your work who, like, really appreciates you. Just, like, having a personal relationship with somebody who, like, actually wants good for you. And that's something that both my parents, like, my dad didn't support me wanting to be an actor, but, like, after he realized I wasn't going to give up, he would send me, like, articles being like, they're looking for a new lottery girl to pick the ball numbers. Maybe
oh,
you can do that.
God, I love your dad.
He would do things like that. And we would just do, like, silly things where, like, I was on the phone with him and I was like, do you think I could send you a letter without, like, using stamps? And he was like, let's see. So then we both wrote letters to each other and flipped the return addresses to try to see if we could get letters to each other. And then, like, got on the phone to be like, it got returned to me. So, like, and then, like, finding someone to do silly shit like that with me who cares about me fills not the void, but, like, makes me feel less alone and reminds me that there are people who aren't my parents that love me.
Is it possible to you or even probable that somehow that's coming from your parents? I'm not trying to push you to that. I'm just wondering.
No, I don't know. Cause I, like, believe in, like, energies and,
yeah,
and whatnot. So, like, maybe, and it's like, sometimes I'll, like, look in the mirror and be like, Jesus, I look like my mom. Like, last time I went to Chicago to go see my family, one of my aunts was like, it is kind of wild that at some angles you look and sound just like Bonnie, and it's crazy. And I was like, I know. So it's, like, nice sometimes to be able to look in the mirror and be like, oh, there she is.
That's so beautiful. Do you refer to, like, the way your parents were ever in, like, your life? Like, do you ever, like, what would my mother have done? You know what I mean? Or, like,
sometimes I think about what my mom or my dad would have done. It's mostly like when things happen, I go, oh boy, it would be nice to hear the reaction to this. Or it'd be nice to hear my mom go, don't fucking do that. What are you doing, you idiot? And I mean, she would never call me an idiot, but she's like, I don't think that's a good idea, Nicole.
The idea of missing those conversations, like, rings really true to me. I would talk, right after my son died, I would talk to him, which is, like, crazy because, well, for a lot of reasons. One, he was dead. But also, even when he was alive, he was 34 days old. So if I had talked to him then, he still would have been, you know, he wouldn't have been like, oh, I understand what you're saying and I'm going to respond to you. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
yeah,
a, like, talking to a baby, like, wasn't going to work regardless.
Yeah, but you got to talk to babies to help them learn
shit. You know what? That's right. And the more books you have in your house, the more literate they become.
Yeah, I learned babysitting that, like, if you talk to
kids. Oh, I forgot that you did that. I probably asked you to babysit my kids at some point.
Yeah, probably. Ooh, yes. And I don't think I could.
Right, because you had any other thing to do.
I probably had an improv show. But I learned when I was nannying that if you talk to kids like they're just normal people, and if a baby points at something, if you say what the item is, it helps them talk earlier.
Okay. That's a parenting book that we can also...
And I didn't realize what I was doing because it would just be like filling time because I was alone with this little kid, and he'd point at it and be like, knife, you want that knife? And then you point at something else and you're like, pen, you want that pen? Well, you can't have either one of those things because guess what? A knife is dangerous. And then he'd just stare at me and I'd be like, dangerous.
Dangerous.
I had a great time nannying. I would tell him my problems. I would talk to him like he was my therapist.
When you were dealing with kids, did you think of like the way your parents dealt with you at all? Like, did that come into play?
Sometimes, because I'd be like, you're being very unreasonable right now.
Why are you doing this? Or you to the kid?
No, to the kid. I'd be like, why do you think? Because like my mom would be like, why do you think that's a good choice? And you'd be like, And I learned that she would like ask, and it would just give her a moment to not be screaming at me. So like when the little kid would like climb on the back of the couch, I'd be like, do you think that's a good idea? And then he'd like sit there and be like, what is an idea?
What's an idea?
What is this? So you'd be like, all right, you thought about it. Come down. And he'd be like, I guess I thought about it.
Yeah, I guess she thinks I learned a lesson. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck's going on. Can we play with a block? Sure. Yeah, let's play with a block.
That is like amazing though, that like way that your parents will live through you, like no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like your mom's parenting is still rattling around in there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Do you think about how your life would be different if they hadn't died? Like, do you think you still would have become exactly who, like, you would be sitting, I mean, you wouldn't be doing a grief podcast, it'd be weird, but that you would still have, like, had the same career and everything? Or you think, like, the grief of that changed you?
I honestly don't know. I think about that a lot because I know I wouldn't have gone to AMDA. My mother would have made me go to a four-year university. But then I was like, oh, maybe I would have gone to like Rutgers, which is like a state university, and Mason Gross is their theater program, which is very good. I was like, maybe I would have gone there. Probably would have found UCB through there. So I probably would have still ended up at UCB. I don't know. It's hard to say, but I will say I think not having a safety net, like I couldn't move back in with my parents. So it's like I just had to figure things out on my own. And it's like, well, if I don't succeed acting, I don't know what else I'll do. So there is no safety net there. I didn't go to college. I don't have a degree. So, like, I guess I just tried harder because I didn't have nothing else.
Right.
I don't know. I truly don't know. I don't know. I think I would have found comedy anyway. Maybe I would have found it earlier, but then I don't know if I'd be as funny because I wouldn't have lived.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense. Like, the idea... particularly as a comedian or as a performer of any kind, to have had like something real happen to you, I think changes what, like the way you perceive the whole world, right? Like the things that seem significant to other people who maybe haven't yet gone through that, to be like, oh yeah, I see. And like, not to devalue anybody who hasn't had tragedy, to devalue their grief when like, they can't get their hair cut or whatever. But it's like, that's nothing.
I mean, that is something to really process. Like, not getting your hair cut? Well,
I mean, I know, imagine. But it is like, puts all those things in perspective for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I say, then on the other hand, I'm like, I still get mad about, like, you know, the most, I downloaded a game on the Nintendo Switch last night and it took 6 hours and I was like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me in my whole life.
It is. I mean,
nothing's ever been worse than this.
When restaurants run out of something I want, I go, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me and both my parents are dead, which is maybe my favorite thing to say to people because they never know what to say back.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough move for the waiter. You're putting the waiter in a rough spot with that particular joke. Is there a moral for you in this?
Yeah, I think it's okay to take time for yourself. And any way you grieve is the right way to grieve. I feel like we think that grief looks a certain type of way and that you'll feel better about it one day. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that maybe you'll never feel better about it. That, like, losing somebody that you love will always make you feel sad, and that's okay because feelings aren't facts. You're not a sad person because you're sad sometimes. You are allowed to feel those feelings, and you're allowed to move on from those feelings, and you're, like, allowed to, like, continue living your life even though that person's not there. I think we're hard on ourselves a lot of the time, and we don't need to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just feels so true to me, that idea of this could go on forever. Like, you mm-hmm. could feel this. I think there's such pressure in, like, the aftermath of sadness to be like, don't worry. Like, yeah. we're gonna build you back up stronger and better than you ever were. And it's like, mm-hmm. but we also, this could be flat for a long time. And to be like, that's okay. It's all right if you're sad forever. Like, that's a kind of living. And that you can still have, like, you know, happiness in, like, that doesn't fade to zero.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, golly, this has been the absolute time of my life.
Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Nicole, thank you for doing it. I know you're a busy human being. Where can people go to find you doing things?
You can find me on social media. I'm at Nicole Byer on Twitter and Instagram. You can watch Nailed It on Netflix. I have 5 podcasts. Why Won't You Date Me? Best Friends with Sasha Zameda, 90 Day Bay with Marcy Jarrow, where we recap 90 Day Fiancé, the funniest franchise in television history, Newcomers, and then the last one is Drag Her with Manu Agapian that I'm on sometimes, where we recap RuPaul's Drag Race.
That's fantastic. Nicole, thank you so much for doing
this.
Thank
you.
I love you. Goodbye. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum podcast.